That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
Faithfully execute the office of President.
President.
President of the United States.
The United States.
So help me God.
Nobody covers 2016. The candidates. The election, the decision. Like 720 WGN. Back to the Steve Cochran Show live from the Iowa caucuses.
We're live in the media center, and we're also live in downtown Des Moines, where a blizzard has decided to hit. Turns out that wasn't just hype. That turned out to be actual and factual. Later, Matt Strawn, former RNC chair for Iowa, will be on. He will be on with Rick Pearson on Sunday, on the Sunday Spin, as will our next guest, who's been on this show many times, David Yepsen. And David Yepsen, nice to see you again.
Good
former
to be with you.
National political reporter for the Des Moines Register. And by the way, what happened with the poll?
What happened with all
it's
the
never
polls?
Wrong.
What happened with all the polls?
But the Register poll is never wrong. I mean, almost ever, right?
One of the things that happens with polls of caucuses is that they overlook the process itself where you're in a meeting. Okay, you're not voting. You're in a neighborhood meeting. And what do you do when people get in there? They talk politics.
Yep.
And if I respect your political judgment, Steve, and you tell me that, you know, Rubio is better than Cruz, I might change my mind. And
right.
There's no way a pollster can
You can't ask that question and get that, can you?
You can't measure that.
David Yepsen, also director of the Paul Simon Institute at SIU Carbondale, which means I was feeling sorry for myself, thinking I had to drive back to the western suburbs today. You actually have a 48-hour drive, if my calculations are right.
It's a 9-hour drive on a good day.
So it should be interesting on the roads.
And Paul Simon would have never spent $1.2 million on Make America Great hats, I'm guessing.
Well, David just made a great point, Pat, off the air. This is not new. This is the Jesse Jackson show. This is a celebrity comes to Iowa and thinks he doesn't have to do the regular stuff.
Well, when I've covered this these campaigns out here for 34 years, and when Jesse Jackson was running in 1984 and then again in 1988, he would get these huge crowds, and everybody was, wow, this is really something, because it was largely white crowds,
right?
And he was tapping into a lot of angst that farmers were feeling at that time, the farm crisis. But there was a difference between showing up to look at a candidate and then going out to caucus. And even in this case with Trump, I thought a lot of those people would show up at the caucuses, and many of them did. But frankly, there were people who in Iowa who would go and look at his events. Hey, this is great. Entertainer. Saw him on TV. But then they had no interest in turning out for caucuses. So these big crowds that Trump gets were a little bit misleading.
I think there's something that Iowa ought to be proud of, though, this morning, and that is that the national media, well, all of us, not just the national media, we all got it wrong in jumping to this conclusion that that would translate, that those large crowds were so moved by the miracle of Trump that they would come out and spend their evening doing the same. It is a show.
It is, and Trump got a good look at by people. That's the thing about these caucuses. I mean, candidates have to spend time here. People get a real look at them up close several times. They talk to their neighbors. This was a big turnout, both parties. And, you know, I just think Trump's shtick kind of wore thin after a while. He got some evangelical votes, but this guy was not a candidate that fit well with Iowa Republicans. Marco Rubio was the one who, a long time ago, I predicted he would do well because he puts together a very nice package, appeals to a lot of people.
Were you surprised that it took Rubio so long to make that run? Because the momentum, I refuse to say Marco-mentum. Will you call someone and tell them to knock that off? The momentum for him seemed to kick in the last few days.
But that was by design.
Is that right?
He played it perfectly. The thing you don't want to do in an Iowa caucus is peak too soon.
Yeah.
Because then people start shooting at you and your poll numbers go down. That started to happen to Cruz. So Rubio timed it just right. He kind of flew under the radar, came in here a lot at the very end, and it came together for him nicely.
Cruz took some punches in the face here in the last 10 days or so and proved that he could take a punch. Now, will that translate to him going to New Hampshire, you think, given that the base of his support here was basically evangelicals?
I don't think it will, because the electorate in New Hampshire is not as evangelical as it is here. But that's the thing about this process. It's a process. Iowa's first. It's not the only one. You got Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada, kind of a package. I'm waiting to see, when do we get this to a Cruz-Rubio battle for who faces off against Trump?
Do you think Trump's got some staying power because of the same sort of effect? It's not like the Star Show doesn't appeal in other states, right?
Right. No, the Star Show does. And in some of these other states, he won't be spending as much time. You can get away with the Star Show. You know, once this moves out of these four early states into the southern regional primaries, then it becomes a tarmac to tarmac game, and he can fly that plane around. And so it may continue to work for Trump.
Were you surprised at all at his concession speech last night that he was actually a grown-up?
I was.
Yeah.
I mean, the joke was, what will he say about Iowa if he comes in?
Right. I was right. You people are stupid. Remember that
right,
line?
Right. Yeah.
He said he was going to buy a farm.
Yeah, that was his last line.
His
I may come back here and buy a farm.
Yeah.
Nice little 6,000-acre place somewhere.
I'd love to see a farmer take him to the cleaners. More with David Yepsen in just a second. Back live from the Media Center in downtown Des Moines with our friends from ABC News Radio. Pat Brady's here. And David Yepsen, the director of the Paul Simon Institute at SIU Carbondale. What do you do there, by the way?
Well, Paul started this when he left the Senate in 1997. And we work on civic education. We study reform issues. We do public opinion polling. Try to continue the things Paul championed in his career.
We have a tremendous lack of understanding when it comes to civics. And it always comes up in a big way during an election year, and particularly during a presidential year. Because candidates will stand up and they will shoot something out of that has no chance of being done
right.
as a president. And there seems to be this great disconnect with voters between what a president can do and the lack of understanding or the connection that Congress has to approve it.
Right.
And that was basic civics when I was going to school. You know, it just seems to not be a part of it anymore.
Well, a lot of that stuff has been cut out of curriculums, you know, putting all the emphasis on science and technology and math.
We got a Schoolhouse Rock, everyone, again. Remember that?
I'm a bill on Capitol Hill.
That's exactly right. I don't want to keep talking about Trump, but one other point on Trump that I think is worthy of discussion, especially to get your perspective on it. He skips the debate, and the geniuses from all the news networks go, brilliant move. Look how he handled that. I don't think so.
No, it was a mistake. Well, we know what he was doing. They said he was brilliant because he's the front runner and he would just do nothing but take hits. But this is a guy that had been taking hits in six debates before. And to blow off the last debate of a campaign came off as a little arrogant. And I think it did turn off some people in Iowa. This is a place, like most campaigns, where voters expect you to show up, get in the arena, give and take. And he copped out.
How about putting money in the tray at church? Did that stuff catch up?
And the two Corinthians.
Two Corinthians,
yeah. Cruz had a great... We used that a great the joke line, two Corinthians walked into a bar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, apparently neither of the Corinthians showed up to caucus for him last night. Let's talk about the Democrats. He is razor thin,
yes.
That close. What'd Bernie Sanders do to get over here?
Well, he tapped into a whole lot of anger in the Democratic Party. The left is very unhappy with Obama's presidency. They didn't get what they wanted on health care. There's war still going on. And Bernie Sanders, not only here, but all over the country, is tapping into a lot of that angst. Steve, I actually think Bernie Sanders had more people at the caucuses than Hillary Clinton did. But because of the system that Democrats use, where they count delegates, the numbers you see are estimates of how many delegates they won. If Bernie Sanders is packing them in college towns, you know, whether you win the 30 delegates by 50 votes or you win them by 500, it's still 30 delegates.
And the delegates were a push last night, right?
Yeah. And a lot of them, a number of them that she won with a coin toss. So I think Bernie Sanders comes out of here having done a pretty good job. Now, Hillary Clinton, I think, dodged a real bullet here. Had she clearly lost, this would have been a big setback for her. Right now, she can go and claim that she won a very narrow victory, but she doesn't get any momentum or buzz here. Hopefully, she limits the damage that's going to happen to her in New Hampshire.
Did you think it was an odd move with it being so close that the Clintons, they declared victory at like 9 o'clock last night?
Well, it's not whether you win or lose, but how you spin the game. And Rubio.
But the spin has to be bought by the national news networks, and they were wondering why she did it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They didn't sign on.
No, but what's the alternative? Go up and declare you're a loser?
Well, maybe you don't say anything, right? So you thought it was okay.
But because the danger in that is that Bernie Sanders gets a chance to go out there and claim a victory. So,
should he have waited to be the last speech of the night?
Well, I don't think so because, you get late in a national audience and that East Coast television audience starts going to bed. So a candidate wants to get out first. I think the guy who handled it well last night was Rubio.
Right.
He's just third. He's the first one out to start talking, upbeat, optimistic, let's go. I mean, it's very similar to what Bill Clinton did when he came in second in New Hampshire in 1992. You know, the comeback.
He lost by 8 points, right?
Yeah. You'd have thought he won the election.
I was mentioning to Pat, though, can we talk to Rubio about, we know you're excited, we know you're all hopped up on sugar like the other kids, but you can't do a 30-minute speech when you come in third. Cut that sucker down just a little bit. Give me a solid 8, maybe a solid 8 to 10. Moving on to New Hampshire, a vastly different state, but very proud of themselves in a lot of ways and what political rebels they are. Are we going to see surprises there?
Well, that's New Hampshire's, is known for that. I think the thing that you'll start to see is there are going to be some more of these candidates who drop out of this race. Some of them are walking wounded. They're out of gas, and they're not going to have any donors. I wonder what happens to Bush at this point. How does he come back out of Iowa with a few points and get a campaign going?
And the amount of money he spent.
Yeah, what happened to him here?
Well, that's one of the stories that I think is interesting, and that the money, we all were saying, there's all this super PAC money, and money will get dumped in here. And at the end of the day, what won was ground games with shoe leather. And frankly, Steve, there's something that was kind of heartening about that. Americans are tired of TV and all that manipulation. And if you had a real human being knocking on your
door.
Shake
my hand.
Yeah, that counts for something. I told somebody yesterday, a Chicago alderman would understand how to win this game.
That's a good point.
It's amazing.
And if they didn't actually win, they'd figure out a way to do it anyway. What were you saying, Pat?
No, it's just amazing when the voters actually speak. I think we've been saying that for a couple of weeks. It's a lot different than what the pundits might suggest. And we saw it in person last night. It was very cool to watch.
And it's refreshing, isn't it?
Yes, very refreshing.
Because all of us in the punditry business, the donors, the media, we're yammering. And you sort of get tired of it. These are grassroots Americans.
The kid I talked to from
the Democratic Party showing up.
Exactly. The kid I talked to from Tokyo had joint residency, and he was really jazzed up to go vote, and he wanted to know how to do it and how to do it right. So it was fun to talk to him.
Well, that's cool. I'll let you go on this. Nothing would thrill me more than a complete frenzied car crash of two brokered conventions. Look, a boy can dream. And I don't see Bernie being able to last that long. I certainly see the Republican thing being able to play itself out. But what do Vice President Biden and Michael Bloomberg do this morning? Do they keep a bag packed by the door?
Well, certainly Biden. The Bloomberg thing, I mean, he's going to spend a lot of money, and a lot of high-paid consultants are going to come back and tell him, a third-party candidacy isn't going to work, right? But Joe Biden, there's a lot of Democrats are having a hard time sorting this out. Both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton have big negatives. Her unfavorables are through the roof, and Bernie Sanders, he's got to start telling people how he's paying for this stuff. And Clinton never really pushed back against him.
Yeah.
Because she figures she's going to need get the Bernie people and doesn't want to make them mad. Well, now we're going to have that argument. So Democrats are evenly divided, at least here in Iowa, over because they've got some each. It's a hard decision. Each candidate's got pluses and minuses.
Now she's locked into not attacking him for a lot longer time now, right?
Well, we'll see what happens in New Hampshire. I certainly think by the time we get to South Carolina, if he wins in New Hampshire, she's going to have to start taking him on.
Pat made a great point the past couple of days, and you were talking about this in regards to the opinion by the Democrats of the Obama presidency and certainly minorities of the Obama presidency. And Pat's point was, hey, we're doing fine, and you need someone who's steady is not exactly hope and change. So how's that going to fire up a crowd?
Well, it's
the non-aspirational Hillary Clinton, doesn't fire folks up.
No, that's right. And she's the past. Jeb Bush is the past. Americans right now are looking forward. I mean, it's pretty rare for a party to get a third term in the White House, and especially when a president's job approval rating is as poor as Obama's. Reagan's was much better than when George Herbert Walker Bush won in '88, and So I do think that the Democrats have a real challenge here in coming up with a candidate who can excite voters.
What was former President Clinton's impact here in Iowa?
Oh, I think he helps fire up the base. Most activist Democrats have fond memories of those times.
Right.
I'm not sure the general electorate thinks as much. There it's a kind of a case of, oh, why do we have this hanging around us? But, you know, he helps turn out a crowd. He spent a lot of time campaigning here for both this time and last time.
Do you think Secretary Clinton will be pushing a baby carriage through New Hampshire? The grandchild references.
The grandbaby references are getting more often, more frequent.
That's not a bad idea. You know,
yeah. I thought it was one of those the pouches when you put it out in front.
Yeah, sure, that's a good idea. You know, you should send her a bill for a consulting fee.
I will. Yes.
And you know, the other point you just made, which rings really true. 28 of the last 36 years, you've had a Bush or a Clinton in the White House. So maybe America's just sick of both of them.
Well, that's what Barbara Bush said a long time ago. That the country's tired of all the Bushes.
We've had enough Bushes.
We did fight a revolution to avoid royalty, right?
Right, right.
So great to see you.
Good to see
and
you.
And I know you'll
Thank
be on
you.
With Rick Pearson on Sunday.
I'll be there.
Rick Pearson with the Sunday Spin. We got to take a break. We'll come back. Andrea is running around in a blizzard, and I mean literally a blizzard, in downtown Des Moines. We'll see if we can find her with Nanook or whoever she's hanging out with in a moment on 720 WGN.
I'm just honored. I'm really honored. And I want to congratulate Ted.
Tonight is a victory for the grassroots.
I didn't even know they were still together. Remember the grassroots? Wow, Steve's been out in the cold too long. He's doing 60s band references. They even predated me. Let me go to Rick Pearson, standing by from your Chicago Tribune, a host of the Sunday Spin. You know, we just had your friend David Yepsen on. What a great guest he is.
Absolutely. One of the man who knows the whole history of the caucuses back and forth.
And he's going to join you Sunday with who?
With Matt Strawn, the former Iowa Republican chairman. And I've got some other people coming on as well. And we'll go over the results and look ahead to New Hampshire.
Matt Strawn will be on with us next hour again. He's been a big help to us here in Iowa as well. In the end, things proved to be a little more traditional Iowa than expected. Did you have the same thought?
Well, to me, you know, everybody talks every election about it's all about the turnout. It's all about the turnout. And, you know, a couple of things that were strange here is everybody had looked at it, well, if it's a big turnout on the Republican side, well, then that's Trump. That's turning out the new voters. And I think what we're seeing with that Cruz victory is the way that more and more things like analytics are being used to drive out, to turn out voters that won't necessarily turn out. The way that evangelicals came out in such massive numbers, and those votes went to Cruz, those votes went to Rubio. I mean, I think we're seeing some good old-fashioned Iowa politics, but kind of amped up through the use of digital metrics.
And the metrics piece was used to perfection with the technology that existed in 2012 in Obama's re-election versus Romney, and now 4 years down the road, obviously it's dramatically better, and it gets better week to week. Pat Brady made the point earlier, Trump's got to get on board with that and stop spending money on hats and start spending money on that.
Well, that and maybe some buses and some vans to get people to the polling place instead of just spending money on gassing up the 757.
Hey, Rick, I mean, you've watched this for a long time. We were talking about the impact of endorsements, and we never really discussed Sarah Palin.
Yeah, is she the candidate killer?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there again, I think it was not a matter of Sarah Palin as a politician, but Sarah Palin as another TV star.
Right.
I mean, this was and that's the other thing, too, is as much as we talk about kind of how this was a old tradition somewhat of Iowa turnout, of grassroots turnout, is – you know, you look at Trump running as the TV star, the TV celebrity. Again, you got to get people to turn out at this thing. And frankly, at a Republican caucus, it's a little bit easier because all you're doing is casting a ballot after listening to some speeches.
Right.
It's not like the Democratic one where you have to, you know, get into your different categories of supporters and your 15% viability rule and thing like that.
The people at Politico have a headline this morning, Donald Trump, 2016's first loser. Is that too harsh, or would you say it's the same thing?
You're fired.
I know what Brady thinks of that.
Well, you know what I think of it as well.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm kind of back and forth on this. One, I mean, this is the first time a guy ever ran, and he's, you know, finishes second place in Iowa. That having been said, for all the braggadocio, who remembers second place? Yeah, I think it's a big loss. I think it's going to impact in New Hampshire significantly. And, you know, maybe after all of these times that we've said this, it's the beginning of the end.
Well, as Ricky Bobby said, if you ain't winning, you're losing.
That sounds like the new Trump bumper sticker.
Hillary Clinton just isn't a very good presidential candidate, is she?
You know, this was stunning. I mean, in some respects, I'd argue that this was a loss for Hillary Clinton, not a win. After going through that campaign of 2008 and everybody looking to see how she would change her style, try to appeal to the grassroots, to be nearly upended by a 74-year-old socialist from Vermont, that is not a good sign. And here again, Democrat, big turnout, lots of enthusiasm, but the enthusiasm is for Bernie Sanders. Yes, Hillary Clinton is, you know, has the paper, the resume, but the enthusiasm factor, it wasn't there in 2008, and it still doesn't seem to be there now.
Did you see that 80% of the voters under 30 went with Bernie?
Yes. And here again, you know, we talk about the youth vote, and of course that was kind of where everybody was waiting to see how, you know, Iowa City was going to vote, Ames was going to vote, where those votes were coming from. And he was racking up huge numbers in those college towns. And for a change, the youth vote actually showed up and it mattered, instead of everybody talking every 4 years about how important the youth vote is.
Free college will do that for you.
Yeah, the great myth of free college, yes. Before we talk about the Tribune poll, which I want to get to here as well, which is of local interest, obviously, in the Anita Alvarez is the headline in all of this. They go to New Hampshire now, and then they move on to Nevada, South Carolina, or South Carolina, Nevada, depending on the party. All of this means somebody in the Democratic leadership has to be calling somebody else in the Democratic leadership this morning going, anybody got Biden's cell phone?
Huh. Well, I don't know if it's that bad, but certainly when you look at New Hampshire and the fact that Sanders is up 20-some percent in the polling up there, and of course when you look back to 2008 after Clinton finished a basic third place in Iowa, New Hampshire helped bring her campaign back and extend that race. That doesn't look to be the case here. South Carolina is going to be another interesting situation too, because Clinton didn't have great memories of South Carolina when she ended up there.
Bill stepped in
South Carolina, and you can be sure those headlines are going to come back as well.
All right, so in your Tribune, Chicago Tribune, ChicagoTribune.com, Anita Alvarez with an edge despite voter unhappiness with her. She's running for re-election. Talk a little bit of what you know of the polling results. This is your story. And were you surprised to see any of them?
Well, one of the big things, and she's up by 7 percentage points over Kim Fox, and then there's Donna Moore in third place, 26% undecided. This is all about name recognition at this point, and as strange as it is, most of the name recognition that Anita Alvarez has right now is on the negative side, the kind of the aftermath of the Laquan McDonald handling of the shooting incident and the charges against police officer Jason Van Dyke. So you have someone who is kind of upside down on job approval. People don't support the way she handled the McDonald case. Nevertheless, more people know her than they do her opponents. And so as a result, she's got a 7 percentage point lead. But as I said, quarter of the vote still undecided. Her two challengers, Kim Fox, former chief of staff to Tony Preckwinkle, very, a lot of people don't know her. They don't know Donna Moore. This is a very fluid race, and, you know, it's one that we will see getting more and more attention. Both opponents, Fox and Moore, are using the kind of anger over the McDonald shooting as kind of driving points to attack Alvarez.
Yeah, and speaking of name recognition, the one thing that jumped out for me is if we all were grouping Alvarez together with Rahm Emanuel and throw the bums out, it appears the anger and the vitriol for Rahm is much more specific. Is that because everybody knows Rahm and maybe everybody doesn't know Anita?
Well, people do know Anita, but it's more, I think, Emanuel is the name that everybody associates with Chicago and with the McDonald incident. And so, but there again, you know, even in our polling there, the mixed results you had of fact that people didn't want to see him resign by a narrow margin, that was kind of an interesting result given the negatives he has.
Hey, Rick, I know the mayor was out trying to sell bonds in New York yesterday, but when he was away, I'm kind of hearing rumblings of people lining up to run in 3 years.
Well, I'm not surprised about that. I think most people would have to say, given his numbers, it would be very surprising to see him politically able to run for a third term. But, you know, I also wondered when you look at those numbers in the poll on his trip to New York, what the potential bond buyers were as well as when we look at the kind of crisis in confidence that the poll showed in Emanuel's leadership.
Are we going to have CPS news today?
Well, we already know CPS about the fact of the leaders in the Chicago Teachers Union rejecting the contract. So, I don't know what the next step is going to be as far as what happens there.
Is it strike vote next? Or?
Well, no, it moves to a procedure. There's still a legal procedure. We're not anywhere close to a strike vote.
Okay.
More from Rick Pearson. He'll join us later in the week, but also, of course, Sunday with the Sunday Spin, 7 o'clock, best political talk on the radio from your best political writer in the business, Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com, and here with us. Thank you, buddy.
Hey, thank you, Steve. Safe travel home.
Thank you, and to follow him on social media at Rap30. We'll come back, get your big story next, unless Andrea has been taken in for the hypothermia-frostbite combination. She's obviously suffering running around downtown Des Moines. Back after this with that on 720 WGN.
WGN is live in Iowa, and the race to decide who will lead the greatest nation on earth is on. Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Andre is back from the tundra. The weather has gotten a little better here in Des Moines. If you're traveling, it looks like the storm track continues to be on an angle out of Iowa, cutting up into south central and then northern Wisconsin, kind of headed for Green Bay.
Yeah, we've seen some weird weather today. It was perfect when we started the show. Then the blizzard came. And I say blizzard because it came down so fast.
It really was a blizzard.
When I was at the coffee shop, they said they were predicting an inch or two an hour until 1 o'clock this afternoon. But
right.
Thankfully, that's kind of tapered a little bit. It's kind of just sleet now. Just sleet.
For those of you listening on I-80, you could tell us, but I think we're actually going to be fine headed back to Chicago, where we'll be in studio tomorrow. One of the people that's been a big help to us in the couple of days we've spent out here is Matt Strawn, former RNC chair, who joins us now. You know, Matt, one of the great points you made yesterday when you were on the show was, and you know, the national media and we as well, we kind of missed this until you brought it up, is that it's not so much about who's speaking, but it's about the person speaking and what they mean to you at the caucuses. And we sort of got an eyewitness to that last night at a couple of the caucus events we attended.
Yeah, and it's we saw that up in my precinct. I'm in a suburban precinct just north of Des Moines. And, you know, we had the local state representative who had served this area for a decade was the one who got up and spoke passionately from the heart about Marco Rubio. We had a local Afghanistan and Iraq veteran who stood up with a passionate speech on behalf of Ted Cruz and why he thought Cruz was the one to keep America safe based on what he had seen from his service abroad. And it just so much more powerful when you have a neighbor peer voice making that closing argument. And And we were the epitome of what happened last night. You know, in my precinct, we finally crunched the numbers, and we had almost a 100% increase in turnout. And
wow.
It was almost exclusively driven by Cruz and Rubio Bowl. Donald Trump finished a very distant third in our precinct.
Matt, that was my question to you, too. Turnout, I mean, this was the first time that I had been caucusing or been to the Iowa caucuses, and where we were downtown, there were 3 Democratic caucuses, 2 Republican, and there were hundreds of people inside of the Iowa State History Museum. Turnout, I guess, in the outer areas just as strong or stronger than you even thought?
You know, it seemed to be, especially in the suburban areas around major metropolitan areas, when I pulled into the church we were at 45 minutes before showtime, and there was already a line out the door. And then I found out that was just the new registrant table, not the table for those of us that were already on the Republican rolls. We had to print new ballots even a half hour before things started. So to give you some perspective, we expected about 280, and we had just about 600 show up. And it was, you know, it sounds corny, but it really was the best of the Iowa caucuses. Nobody was angry that we were starting late. Nobody was angry that there were lines. You know, people had brought their kids. You know, so I know we take a lot of guff sometimes as to, you know, why Iowa gets this privilege. I hope for the world that was watching last night, you know, they saw the best of, you know, kind of the best of democracy and the best of, you know, participatory grassroots government on display.
We saw that as well. People lined up, and the caucuses had to start at a particular time, and people were lined up, and the folks at the table were still processing. It would have been a fist fight in Chicago.
Oh, absolutely.
And everybody was great. Everybody was cordial. You know, people were actually having fun, and they were doing their civic duty. It was pretty cool to see.
One lady I talked to, Matt, she was walking in with her 5 young daughters, and she said she wanted to bring her 5 girls to see this. None are of voting age yet, but that's a really cool experience because we can't really do that in Illinois. You can bring your kids to the polling places, but this is a chance for them to kind of see the process in action, so that's pretty cool.
Well, and how many times in Illinois do we do this? Oh, crap, I forgot I got to vote. And then you run over to the place, and you hope there's no line, and you go in. You should always hope there's a line.
Yes.
Every time you vote, you should hope there's a line.
Hey, Matt, sorry we didn't get up there last night. The Chicago hillbillies were driving around in circles downtown for a while.
Oh, yeah, it's my fault.
Well, that's what happens when you bring the guy from Bloomington with you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, it's so easy to get lost in Des Moines.
Hey, give us some perspective here just on the caucus on both sides and going forward. I mean, what's your take on the race? And give us both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think what you saw, especially in, you know, the suburban areas, which would be kind of the counties Mitt Romney carried 4 years ago here, the Rubio strategy of consolidating, you know, the Republican electorate that places pragmatism and electability. He ran 20 points ahead of the rest of the field on that. That's what I'm watching for, if he can take that boost of momentum and kind of make that case in New Hampshire over the next 8 days. And on the Democratic side, you know, I tell you, sure, it's a tie, but if Hillary can at best just tie a 74-year-old socialist from Vermont, I think she's got big trouble. Now she's got an organization. She has the money. She's going to be the presumptive nominee most likely. But I think there's a lot of Democrats that are lamenting their choice is going to be between that socialist and someone who will have a cloud of an indictment hanging over her for the course of the race.
And she's going to have to hang to the left of Chairman Mao for the rest of this campaign, and she to prevail.
Well, yeah, it's amazing, Pat. In the last Des Moines Register poll over the weekend, you know, 80% of likely caucus goers said that they would be comfortable supporting a Democratic socialist. And the pollster laughed, actually, when she was saying that, because that wouldn't even have been a question she would have thought to have asked 4 years ago. So I think it just signals that, you know, the extreme left is controlling the agenda and the debate that's happening in the Democratic primary.
Your old friend David Yepsen, who will be appearing with you on Rick Pearson's Sunday Spin on WGN Sunday morning, David brought up the point of Clinton / Bush fatigue. And, you know, we want somebody new. We want some new voices and some new perspective, along with being kind of a bad candidate and having her likability problems. Did you hear anything about fatigue during the run of this Iowa caucus?
Yeah, I did, Steve. And, you know, to give the Clinton campaign credit, from an organizational standpoint, they had learned their lessons from 2008. They were an incredibly well-organized campaign around the state. But the one thing that they couldn't change, that they couldn't improve, was the candidate. And, you know, for whatever reason, she just She just had trouble connecting with voters. And, you know, I tell you what, look at Governor Bush's numbers here. That's the same
awful
thing we heard time and time again on the Republican side from moderate business-oriented Republicans that, well, I love him, I'm sure he'd be great, but I don't know if we need another Bush. Unfortunately, the Democrats, well, fortunately for us, unfortunately for them, you know, they don't have other viable options like we do.
The Trump story is fascinating to me and really quite joyous. as I took a look at Politico this morning, and a headline said Trump first loser for 2016. He goes to New Hampshire now and, you know, hopes the polling is right because he's got a significant lead there. But one thing we know, Iowa creates momentum positively and negatively. How much of a drag is last night going to be for him in New Hampshire, do you think?
Well, I know your sidekick Brady there is still torn up over Trump's failure to win last night.
We're both
hey,
in
Matt,
mourning.
Matt, we were at dinner last night. Great restaurant downtown Des Moines, and I was getting had the
Splash, right? Is
Splash.
That
Splash?
Was really, plug, yeah.
Really, really good. And I told Steve, I go, this is better than Christmas.
He was rubbing his hands together.
How many times during that dinner did I go, boys, come on, come on. Be fair, be fair.
For the sake of the process, Trump going away would be swell, but it's not going to happen anytime soon, right?
No, it isn't. And, you know, but I think one takeaway, you know, Trump was selling the sizzle. You know, he wasn't selling the steak. And I think the closer voters get to, you know, making that final decision, Iowans found him wanting more, more substance, more opportunity to actually ask him questions to find out if these recent conservative policy conversions were authentic, you know, more respect for the traditional process. And the New Hampshire folks are even more cranky about respecting the traditions of the New Hampshire primary and actually getting a chance to look him in the eye, ask tough questions. So, you know, if he's going to have to put this thing back together, he's going to have to deviate from flying the plane over, you know, giving a thumbs up and throwing out a few catchphrases.
One of a mutual friend of ours at the Wall Street Journal told me the difference between Iowa and New Hampshire is they're very much similar, but Iowa people are nicer.
I'll take it.
I do have to say, you know, I know you're not a big fan of compliments because, you know, that's part of the way folks in the Midwest are cut as well. But aside from all the help you've given us, the people of Des Moines are everything that you've heard and everything they're cracked up to be. And I was really pleased to see that all of the predictions we had made about the playbook being rewritten and everything was turned upside down. Well, it didn't turn out to be true. It turns out you do have to sleep in Des Moines for a couple of nights. You do have to shake a couple of hands. And I think that's great.
Well, and the one thing that does stay true and constant is you can count on the Iowa caucuses to surprise you. And they did again in a way that, you know, not just I think when we were talking, everybody assumed that the new people turning out would be Trump votes, and they weren't. You know, my neighbor's a perfect example. He and his wife showed up at the caucus site with their five kids last night. They'd never caucused before. And I said, you know, what are you doing here? And he said, I just want to make sure there's two more votes against Donald Trump. And little did we know that was replicating itself across the state, you know, all last night.
That's why I think, and Matt, give me your take on this. This could be a house of cards that might fall quicker than everybody thinks.
Yeah, I think so. And I'll be curious to see how that plays out with the rest of the field. Because if you're someone like Marco Rubio, you know, he wants to make this make it a three-man race pretty quickly. He doesn't necessarily want it a two-man race right away. I think Marco Rubio probably needs Trump in there as a foil for a little bit longer to make sure, you know, those more angry conservative voices that would probably gravitate to Ted Cruz if we had a Rubio-Cruz matchup. So, you know, if he falters quickly, even though Rubio has a boost of momentum coming out of Iowa, you know, I think it's in Rubio's best interest for Trump to still hang around for a while.
I know that you can contact Mr. Rubio much more quickly than we can. As big a night as he had last night and as good as he handled things, can you tell him not to make a 30-minute speech for finishing third?
Well, was that about half the time that Cruz spent for finishing first?
Yeah, well, he was.
Yeah,
it was a filibuster.
He was pretty pleased with himself, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. Hey, Matt, I went to the Trump.
His kids
Trump
left.
Speech.
Did you notice that? The kids just walked out. Yeah, Pat was live at the Trump goodbye.
I treated myself to a big Heineken, sat in the back row, and just watched the speech.
All right, we're done. We're done with picking on Trump. Again, thank you, Matt Strawn, and the former RNC chair, and David Yepsen. You're both going to be on Sunday on the Sunday spin and in town for a couple of days. So whatever you need, just let us know.
Hey, thanks, guys. Have a safe trip home.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Thanks. Good guy.
Great guy.
Yep, and very well done in
number one in his law school class.
How do you get to know you?
Because I had to copy off somebody.
You were the guy going, move your hand.
Hey, Matt. Hey, no, we went to a different school. But, you know, he never practiced either. He was number one. He goes, I never practiced.
How about that?
Yeah. That's pretty amazing.
You know, one of our guests who stood us up this morning, I noticed in the bio, got his doctorate at the University of Chicago and also attended Oxford. Dennis Goldford is who I'm referring to. And maybe that's why he didn't show up, because he heard you and I were here. But
Steve, the way I put it, I was going to go to Oxford, but I couldn't get in. So, you know, they wouldn't accept me.
Yeah, well, I was going to go to Cornell, and I never applied. but Goldford and Matt, is there something about Des Moines? I mean, because Goldford's a teacher at Drake. He's a professor at Drake. There's a guy with a resume you think he could take to any major university in the world. Matt with his number one in the law school thing. You know, it's that it's the smaller town, great Midwestern life.
Oh,
that people
yeah.
have
family,
here.
The whole thing. And a lot of commentary about, I heard some of the elected officials say people from here, they go away, go to school or whatever, and then they come back.
Yeah.
Because the quality of life in Des Moines, no tolls, no traffic, and free parking on Sundays.
And I heard the state of Iowa actually has a budget.
I think
that is true.
Yeah.
I think they might have a surplus.
Budget, wait. What's that?
That's where
a
you figure out how
budget.
Much money you can spend.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Huh.
Let's take a break and come back. More coming up. Steve Cochran, we're live in Des Moines, and we're apparently the only ones live in Des Moines.
We are the last. This is funny. We are. I can hear. You can hear the
chairs. Can hear an echo. Echo. echo here in the media center on 720 WGN. We continue now with the big story. Here's Andrea.
Well, this hour's big story, of course, the result of the Iowa caucuses. Who won depends on who you ask on the Democratic side. Hillary Clinton declaring victory last night. All right, and Hillary Clinton, it was a razor-thin lead over Bernie. The votes are still being counted here in Iowa, but the state Democratic Party chair says they're now poised to award more Democrats to Hillary than to Bernie. Either way, now Bernie's calling the nearly too close to call loss a victory, expected to take away a win at their next stop in New Hampshire, a trip that former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley will not be making. He announced last night that he is suspending his campaign. Meanwhile, for the Republican presidential candidates, a big night for Senator Ted Cruz, already receiving congratulations from Trump, who came in second place.
So, Huckabee's out as well.
Huckabee is out as well. Marco Rubio finished a strong third. Huckabee, who won the Iowa caucuses back in 2008, has dropped out of the race. And we're going to be playing for you a little bit later on this morning, perhaps before 7 o'clock, some of the caucuses that we were able to visit last night. The Democratic caucus that we were at the Iowa State Historical Museum was very lively. And they were actually at one point arguing, or I guess trying to woo one final voter in the room to vote either for Hillary Clinton or
was it
Bernie
tied
Sanders.
At that point? So it, that was the deciding
it
vote?
It was tied at that point, and boy, it was. You want to talk about a caucus raucous.
Well, I'll give you a sense, too, when we'll play this before 7,
yeah.
Before the top of the hour. But it'll give you a sense of what actually goes on at these things.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. I mean, you've seen pictures, you've seen the videos on television, but to actually be in the room, a packed room, where one side of the room is trying to argue for one candidate, the other for the other candidate, and they're standing at folding chairs trying to make their point. It's very interesting.
And they started hitting each other. It was crazy.
They didn't hit each other.
Oh, okay,
but
I probably added that part.
It was a very lively and spirited debate that they had.
And it's time for the big story. Andrea Darlis is standing by. Let's find out together if she actually made it 2 blocks to Java Joe's coffee shop or if she's stuck in a snowbank in downtown Des Moines. Here's Andrea.
Oh, my God. I seriously look like Dr. Zhivago and I just walked through the tundra. I walked 2 blocks.
La, da, 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 da.
I'm telling you, first of all, I think I'm the only person. Does it sound like I'm in an echo, honestly?
No, you're fine. You're fine. You're probably it's probably the hypothermia and the frostbite.
No. Well, I walked into Java Joe's, which was packed yesterday. Remember we did the report?
Yep.
Rick Santorum was here. Rick Paul was here. Everybody and their brother was here. You couldn't even get into this coffee shop. I am the only soul in the coffee shop today. They said, I sat down and got a coffee. They said, please get something else. We have three people here. They just closed the Des Moines schools, which is probably that's becoming the big story right now. So there's no school in Des Moines today, just for anybody who's listening. But, Steve, I'm telling you, what a difference a day makes. This place was packed yesterday. And I did just talk to the owner, and he said they always typically like this particular day because it's the day after. Things calm down again, not like this. He said there usually are maybe a half dozen people, maybe a dozen people milling around the coffee house the day after the caucuses. But today it's Deadville because everybody's inside because of the storm. It's coming down fast, and it's coming down furious as well. But last night was a much different story. We actually went to some of the caucuses and spoke to a Hillary supporter and a Bernie supporter. This is a woman who was caucusing for Hillary.
And I'm caucusing for Hillary Clinton tonight.
How come? Tell me why.
Because she definitely has the experience. I like all of her stands on the issues. She's for early education. She's for making sure that we all have a fair and equal access to lots of different services. And I mostly think that her experience in foreign policy is something that we definitely need, given everything that's going on in the world today.
Where are you going to be caucusing?
I'm caucusing in Urbandale.
Okay, now, then we also talked to someone where the race still very, very, very close to call was Hillary declared victory, actually, last night. But before that, this was a voter supporting Bernie Sanders.
I am caucusing for Bernie Sanders.
How come?
Like you said about young people, I think he's done a really good job at getting young people involved. And I think it's really important for our future president to be able to reach a younger audience. So in a general, that's one of the reasons.
Does he remind you of like a favorite relative or somebody that maybe you know in your family?
Not necessarily. I just think that he's very well spoken and knows what young people want, and he's been doing a great job at rallying young voters.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I get your name.
Kelsey.
And that was a voter yesterday that we spoke to.
How old was Kelsey?
I would quote her at about 22, 23. Definitely early to mid-20s.
Yeah, the caucus that we were all at where that sound came from, I would say the majority of the crowd was 40 or under.
Yeah, let me ask the crowd today what they thought of the results.
Things a little quiet at Java Joe's.
I want more foam in my latte.
I guess you can just go behind the counter and get your own.
Hey, Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow, though. So
what's that?
Oh, good. Oh, no, wait. That means more winter.
No, that means spring.
Oh, that's an early
Groundhog
spring?
Groundhog Day, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Oh, he saw his shadow, and he was, okay, got
it. Pat Brady's a full-service operation. He does the weather as well.
Boy, good. Have him come out here in the blizzard with me.
No, I got to drive home in about 3 hours. That's what I'm worried about.
All right, so.
I'm not going anywhere, man.
Andre Donis, we will pick you up at 10 from whatever snowbank you decide to just fall into.
Good. I'll be waving the red flag up in the air. Come find me.
More from Andrea on the street or back here with us at the Media Center in downtown Des Moines. Say goodbye.
Bye, guys.
Man.
The big story with snowbound Andrea Darlis on the streets of Des Moines. Where are you now?
You know, I actually am on the streets of Des Moines. I was at Java Joe's Coffee House. Yes. Here's my theme. Yes. I was at Java Joe's Coffee House, Stephen. Being the only person there, myself and the owner, felt like an episode of Cheers. Everybody knew my name. It was true. After the hour I spent there. But truly, caucus morning, post-caucus morning in Des Moines, I'm told, is always very quiet. This is just exceptionally quiet, though, because of all the snow that they're getting. We actually did get a couple of workers to wander in driving snow plows and salt trucks. The weather seems to have gotten a little bit better. It's not really blizzard-like anymore. I would call it sleet-like. But what it's given me the opportunity to do is literally walk around the city of Des Moines talking to people the morning after the caucuses on the inside portion, which is called the Skywalk. So kind of like we have in Chicago,
yeah,
the underground
sure.
tunnels that go from Daly Center to the Thompson Center. They have the Skywalk, which is above ground. And it's some really cool little businesses and shops. And I talked to Scotty Harris, who's owned a shoe shine business, takes up two storefronts. He's been there for 31 years, and this is what he had to say.
Well, one thing that I see different today is the weather. And with the weather, every morning I sit here at 7 o'clock, greet everybody good morning. I see people who come to work at 8:30. They coming through here at 7:30 trying to beat the weather.
Right, right. Yeah. What do you think of all the hoopla in Des Moines yesterday because of all the political candidates here?
Well, I think a lot of people got let down, especially between Trump and
Cruz.
Hillary and Bernie. I think a lot of people got let down with that, too. But ours is the start of something. You know,
today's another day.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah,
I love that guy. I love that guy. You know, simple, clean view of the world. I'm shining shoes. I'm watching people. I'm listening. People are a little let down.
And he was so upbeat. He was playing some gospel music, which he turned down a little bit so we could do the interview. But everyone, again, is stopping to talk about what happened last night, what's going to happen now. So, really, I know I was first in the nation. We're on to New Hampshire next. But it's really been quite an experience talking with everybody and watching history in the making, which is what we did last night, Steve.
And you will be in New Hampshire this coming weekend.
I will, yeah. I'm going to leave Super Bowl Sunday, and I'll be in New Hampshire Monday and then Tuesday for the primaries.
And before we finish up here in Des Moines today, I want to play back another somebody that you met in the Skyway who was playing a little original music yesterday.
Yeah, I saved that for you. We can play that. I'm going to head back to you guys at the media center right now, but again, you know what? This has been an awesome experience. You know, we joke around about the weather, and it is snowing quite heavily here. But it's great just walking around and talking with everybody. It's like a coffee clutch on every corner.
For the four people
today, though,
the four people still in downtown Des Moines include us and Andrea, and we'll get you a little caucus music from a Des Moines resident here. Man and his guitar in a little bit.
And thank you, Dave. Well, it's a caucus raucous finale. This hour's big story, Hillary's campaign.
Wah, wah, wah.
We'll have more, though, after this. Right now, though, Hillary's campaign declaring victory.
Yes! Yeah!
That was last night. It was a razor-thin lead over Bernie Sanders. The votes were still being counted here in Iowa, but the state Democratic Party chair says they are now poised to award more Democrats to Hillary Clinton than Bernie Sanders. Either way, Bernie Sanders calling the nearly too close to call loss a victory.
What always has bothered me is when people say, well, I like you, Bernie. I want to vote for you, but I just don't think you can win. Well, I think that today we took a giant step to overcome that kind of doubt in many voters.
Bernie Sanders is expected to take away a win, though, at the next stop in New Hampshire, a trip that former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley will not be taking. He announced last night his campaign is being suspended. Meanwhile, for the Republican...
Did you hear Mike Huckabee's line on getting out? Because I'm getting out because of illness. The voters of Iowa are sick of me.
Oh, I didn't hear that. I know,
very
right?
Funny.
I'm surprised it wasn't sooner. But meanwhile, for the Republican presidential candidates, a big night for Senator Ted Cruz.
To God be the glory.
Already receiving congratulations from Donald Trump, who came in second.
I'm just honored. I'm really honored. And I want to congratulate Ted.
Marco Rubio finished a strong third, as you said. Huckabee, who won the Iowa caucuses back in 2008, dropping out of that race. So that's a little bit of a wrap-up of what we did last night and this morning here in Iowa. We are on to New Hampshire, though live from the media center now.
You're going to be in New Hampshire Monday and Tuesday morning.
Yes.
On the show.
On the show.
The primary is Tuesday night. Now, you're going to be out there Sunday.
I'm going to be out there Sunday.
The candidates will be out there beating the streets Sunday. But yeah. I would think Sunday afternoon, if you find some public place where people are watching the Super Bowl,
yeah,
there are going to be candidates there like flies on flypaper.
Oh, I completely agree. Completely agree. In fact, they were already sending out advisories saying where they're going to be watching the Super Bowl. So maybe we'll watch the Super Bowl with Donald Trump.
Are you going to Manchester?
I am. Yeah, I will be there. Are you going?
No, I'd love to.
No, all but right, Pat has a scouting report on places you can spend some time.
All right, good. We'll have
in Manchester.
We'll have to.
Professional places.
Of course. Oh, yeah.
The other stuff is an internet site.
I don't go to any of those, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, that is this hour's big story.